CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. You made it through the weekend and you're here for a Monday morning bright and early at 6 o'clock. Yes. All right, let's start your Monday off in the right way, the way you know best. You may notice some changes to the look and feel this morning, and those will be happening through the course of this week. We've got lots of exciting things happening. Among them, here she is, the woman that you woke up for, Leanne Moll. Good morning, ass. How are you?
Hola.
How are you doing?
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a change. The we decided to have a go at like giving us a new look and feel. So I thought it's about time. You got to keep refreshing and renewing this stuff. You know, you don't want to get tired of the same old, same old. So it's all happening. It's Monday. Supposedly tomorrow. Tomorrow is the 21st, is the shortest day of the year. Dun, dun, dun. So then we finally are on the other side of the middle of winter tomorrow. But my God, if you were anywhere except in your bed this weekend, you would have felt all of that. You didn't need me to tell you, right? Bloody hell.
Yeah, it was ass paralyzingly cold, as you put it.
Yeah, that's the only way to put it. And tell me, have you had all the birthday celebrations for this month already? They're all done?
Yeah, all done. And then, you know, it's Mother's Day, and then my mom's and my birthday, and then Father's Day. So Father's Day signals the end of a bit of a batch of spending time together. I think what I'm excited about is there's one more thing for me to receive for my birthday.
Yes.
And that's coming this week. It's a new pair of glasses.
Oh.
Went and had
my eyes tested. Are they going to be library glasses? Are they going to be ones that an old librarian might wear?
So at this point, I was not even looking at the frame because generally I wear glasses because I can't see far.
Right.
But what happens in your 40s...
Tell me.
...is you start to not be able to see close either.
Oh, shit.
So you'd think it would, like, just even itself out. But
oh,
no.
Shit.
It results in you having to wear, and they always sound like granny things, bifocals.
Oh, no, Leanne. No.
But...
Oh, no.
But
oh,
beyond
no.
that, those
oh,
aren't
no,
even
no,
good
no,
enough.
No, no, no.
Oh, God. What is it? What do you need? Do you need telescopic ones? Do you have those
multifocals.
Ones? Do you have those ones like Thomas Edison used to wear? Not Thomas Edison, Ben Franklin. We used to have to swap the lenses the whole time. They had like a little lever on the side, and then you'd go click, 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 and you'd change the actual lenses.
Yeah. So these are multifocals.
Oh, my God.
So when I remember bifocals, I remember my gran had them, and they had this like distinct half moon shape on the lens where some of it would magnify and she'd have to move her head up and down. Now it's different. Now you don't see that on the lens.
Right.
Thank goodness. They just play with the thickness. But like he explained, instead of reading with your eyes going from left to right, you now need to read with your nose. So that you can keep the glasses.
Jesus, this is embarrassing.
I'm dying. Literally.
Oh, my God. You know, how long do you think it's going to be until we have to take you out into the yard and shoot you?
Listen, I've been working my way up to it pretty steadily.
You know,
don't apply pressure. I'm getting there.
I meant to wear these most of the time, right? So I meant to actually have these on when I'm looking at a screen or I'm doing the show or whatever. And I can still do all of the things without straining and without getting headaches and all of that shit, including driving at night and reading a lot of stuff and looking at screens the whole time. So I don't feel like I should be wearing them all the time. I do wear them sometimes. Like if I've got a lot of very, very focused work to do, then it kind of helps because you're just... It's one less thing to have to worry about, right?
When you're making bombs and things.
Yeah, because that's what I do all day, you know, making bombs. It's to make me sound like a terrorist. Put me on some watch list now because of this. It's so goddamn irritating to get old. And, you know, I was with my parents for Father's Day yesterday. It's just, it's so difficult to see them getting old. You know, the way they walk, the way they take a long time to say something, the way these two, yeah. I mean, they've been together now, what, 46 years or something. And there isn't an opportunity where my mother doesn't take a swipe at my dad or vice versa. They're just hilarious. But at the same time, you think, oh my God. You know, if I were a 7-year-old, I'd think they hated each other. But getting old is so tough, man. You know, I think about this all the time because someone said something very nice to me on Friday. It's like, oh, you seem like you don't get old, which I thought was sweet. But I know I can feel it. Like the kind of thing that would get me to get out of bed and rush around and do a million things a day. I mean, I can still summon that power up, but I can maybe summon it up for 2 days a week. It's not something I could do. And I took it for granted when I was 22, you know, I was like, this is something that's how it's going to be forever. And look, I don't want to moan and complain about this because I do think you get wiser and you get better at conserving useless energy. Like you would have wasted a ton of energy, either trying to get laid or trying to get rich quick or trying to win at things that you weren't really meant to win at. You know, there was a whole bunch of stuff that I do not look back on and think, oh, well, that was a clever move. You did so well to do all of that stupid shit. There's a lot of it that I'm glad is over, that's in the past, that I'm happy to move on from. But, oh, my God, you do... There's certain things that it's sore to do. This sounds horrible.
Yeah.
My parents have the fattest Jack Russell you've ever seen in your life. She's enormous. She's shaped like a concrete bollard and weighs twice as much. And I picked her up yesterday and I thought, fucking hell, my elbow, something's gone wrong here. You know? Oh my God. Anyway.
So for Father's Day, I gave my dad, he's got such a sweet tooth, but he can afford to because he's, as mentioned, a cyclist.
Yes, of course.
And he's as skinny as a toothpick. But I bought him these chocolates and nougats and wrapped them in a pile. And at the bottom were those gummies that look like teeth.
Oh, yeah, I love those.
Because he's lost so many teeth. So it's enough to, God, you can use these to chew through the other sweets. He even jokes and says, I'll be back now. I'm just going to go and brush my gums. Oh, gosh.
Fuck, that's terrible. All right. Well, we're not going to sit here and moan about this shit all day, but it was probably Father's Day is a good time to remark on this stuff. And I do have to say, like, I've thought about this too. You have to draw a line. This whole idea of like, oh, well, I might be a father or whatever. And I've always said, you know, you can always have a kid at whatever age, but you need energy for that. So I'm gonna say moratorium ends at like, and I hate saying never, never ever say never, right? I'm thinking you've got to draw a line somewhere around 53, 54. Then you can't after that. After that, it's too late. You just got to give up. You've got to move on. You got to decide that you can be an interesting part of the world, make your difference without having to leave your progeny behind. So that's kind of where my head's at. But I hope you had a good Father's Day. I hope you had a good weekend. If you are a father, I hope that you were given some love and kindness and some respect for a change, because so many fathers in this country are like an accessory to so many kids, not by choice always, but sometimes by choice. And we know what a big problem that is in this country. So it's funny to me that every Father's Day is usually quite a quiet day on social media. It's not a day where people are their usual snappy selves, because they're seeing that there are some people in the world who have good relationships with their dad. And I think it hurts a lot of people because they might not have that. And if you felt that way yesterday, then I certainly don't take any pleasure in it. And I'm sure that, you know, you will do a better job if you are raising your own kids. And if you're not, and you're able to be that role model for someone else, then go ahead and do that in the best way possible. Also, my God, did the asshole fall out of Bitcoin over the weekend. It got to $18,000 at some point. And, you know, again, I'm trying to be optimistic about things, but I just see this world economy. And really, this is not just a weird a concatenation of events. This is not some kind of, oh, bad luck, you know, it's we're in a down spiral. No, we have been managed into this economy. We've been managed into the disaster that we're in at the moment. The reason everything is costing you more is because the powers that be in politics have made the stupidest decisions in recorded human history. Ever since 2020, when this coronavirus came around and all the governments of the world lost their collective minds at exactly the same time, every decision they've made since then has been a disaster. And most especially those concerning the economy. This whole situation with Russia and the Ukraine has been mismanaged beyond belief. I saw a very scary clip which was being shared yesterday. A guy called David Sachs, who I follow on a podcast called All In. He's fantastic. And he put up this tweet, which got me a little bit worried. I actually tried to get the video, but it's going to be too difficult for me to find it now. And I don't want to waste time, you know, getting you all ramped up into what I saw at fucking 9 o'clock last night or whatever. But the fact is, there's this dude who's busy explaining, listen, the thing you don't want to do, and this guy is a researcher and an international relations expert who's been watching the behavior of superpowers for the last, you know, 30, 40 years. And he's an old man now. He says, what you've got to understand about this whole Russia-Ukraine situation is that the more you back Russia into a corner, the more dangerous they become. And the world has no understanding anymore because it's been so long since the Cold War. And the number of people who are actually alive who saw nuclear weapons being dropped on Japan or saw them being tested in the Pacific or in Nevada or in Novaya Zemlya, the number of people who can actually tell you those stories of what these nuclear weapons can do and what they are, it's a vanishingly small number of people. And we've forgotten the extraordinary end result that could occur when a nuclear superpower feels like it's being backed into a corner. Now, Russia is no longer a superpower by any means, but they are nuclear. And the more we push this, you know what they say about a bear, right? And Russia's symbol is the bear. And if you eventually back a bear into a corner, it attacks you with all of its might. And all of its might in the case of Russia means that they could be crazy enough. Everybody keeps telling us Vladimir Putin's crazy. They could be crazy enough to do the unthinkable and start some kind of really ugly nuclear thing going. And we cannot afford that as a world. And if we keep on fighting with them and we keep on pushing this bullshit agenda of like, we're not going to use oil and we're going to, you know, you've got to understand, like, the world is the world is a place of real, not a place of imagined. I had this conversation with Ben on Friday. And the people who live in fantasy just don't seem to understand that the reality is there isn't enough wind and solar power. There isn't enough green energy. There aren't enough electric vehicles to deal with this carbon, you know, dioxide emission problem that you say we have. So we've got to be realistic. The world needs to develop, and to develop it needs oil and it needs gas. And we need those things in large quantities, and Russia can provide them. And instead of striking a deal with Russia, the world leaders, and I'm talking about the people in the G20 or the G7 or however many numbers you want to put in there, it's basically America, the most powerful countries in Europe, and then if you include China and Russia and Japan, those are the only, and maybe India, then you've got the whole picture, right? The rest don't really matter. That includes us here in the south of Africa. It includes most of our African neighbors. Includes most of South America. We don't really matter. But those countries, when they get together and they decide, oh, no, we're going to do this, it just doesn't make sense sometimes, the decisions that they make. The decisions they made during coronavirus about the actual virus and our response to it. The economic decisions they made since then. This preoccupation they have with Vladimir Putin and with Russia. The preoccupation that they had with Donald Trump before that. It's very, very dangerous. It's putting the world in a less safe position, not a more safe position. And it does worry me. These are the kinds of things that I'm thinking about often. When I saw that clip last night, I was like, oh, God. Okay, yeah. This is what this is what I've been thinking about. So this is more important
to
me.
What a thing to watch before you go to sleep.
I know, and this is not what I wanted to wake up thinking about this morning, but this is what I went to sleep thinking about last night. And it means a damn lot more than Father's Day, you know? So let's just keep our perspective on these things, because otherwise it's going to drive us crazy. Now, speaking of dumb leaders and the dumb things they do, when is the world going to stop telling me that Joe Biden is a great leader? When are they going to stop telling me that this guy is compos mentis? And when he can actually figure out where the fuck he is on any given day, he doesn't know if he's a teapot or a hockey stick. They put him on a bicycle in Delaware and let him drive around, ride around on his bicycle. He had obviously, you know, the Secret Service following in big vans. You could see them in the video. But this idiot falls off his bike in front of everybody, including the news crews. And then what they do, which is so predictable, is they cut the camera as soon as he falls, because they don't want us to see this pathetic, senile old man who's trying to hold things together for the Democrats, and they just cannot. It's just outrageously embarrassing. Am I wrong? You saw the clip, right?
Yeah. You know, again, it was that situation where you were voting for anyone but Trump.
Yeah.
Anyone.
Right.
And this is now the reality's hitting, and this is what you've been left with. But he was wrapping up this ride, fell down, and everyone's immediate reaction was to block the cameras. So just to, it makes you think how much else has been, you know.
Yeah. Don't these guys realize, like, the days of spin are over? And you can call the rest of us conspiracy theorists as much as you like, because that doesn't hurt us anymore. And frankly, I don't care if you demonetize something on YouTube or you cancel me from Twitter or whatever else. It's not going to stop me from thinking that you're completely wrong and that everything you've backed has fallen apart. And that narrative is coming true, whether people like it or not. You know, as it is with the Russian narrative, which is going ahead. And then I see things, you know, in the news about the World Economic Forum, and it's like, come on, guys. Don't you see that the people of the world are so much wiser now? They can find information like they were never able to find before. It's very difficult to spin stuff to people who are not listening to you, because you have no credibility. Mainstream media, the academy, the governments of the world, all these supranational bodies. I mean, I met some people 2 weeks ago when I went to these embassy events that I went to from the United Nations. I felt kind of sorry for these people, because they were traipsing around. No one cares about them. No one wants to talk to them. No one is interested in what the United Nations have to say anyway. I mean, it's just such a sad, pathetic throwback. And I mean, we'll talk about this in Collectomania later on, but one of the people who founded the United Nations in its original form, the League of Nations, who was our Prime Minister, Jan Smuts, the whole point of creating that organization was to prevent wars like we're seeing in the Ukraine now. And if the UN can't do that, then they're just a very, very expensive, very, very inefficient bureaucracy, which we don't need, because we've already got those in every country in the world. So I don't see the point of them anymore. You know, there's stuff that we have to get rid of. Anyway, I do want to move on, because there are a lot of things we have to talk about this morning. And as I mentioned, Collectomania later on, I have got a chance today to tell you about my collection of books, which we'll get to a bit later on. You know, I collect so many things.
Nice.
This is one of the ones. So I spent last night also preparing for that, so I could show you a couple of those. And hopefully that'll be interesting. Dr. Hanan is going to join us in a short while. We're going to talk to him. It's going to be okay with Dr. Hanan on a Monday morning. This is how we start our week, so we can get right in there and sort out our heads first. Also, apparently there's a story about 8 passengers. This is amazing. Who got off a Qatar Airways plane, and they tried to sneak into South Africa through secret tunnels. Now, do we have secret tunnels at O.R. Tambo?
Well, they're secret, so we don't know. But how did these people know?
How does this happen? We have secret tunnels in O.R. Tambo?
Yeah. So these passengers, I sounded like an Australian there. So, these 8 men, 4 from Bangladesh, 4 from Pakistan, they didn't have visas to enter South Africa. They were supposed to be transiting through South Africa to another country. And now you remember that, I think it was 2015, transit visas were no longer required if you were transiting through South Africa. But Home Affairs, from this incident, have now said we're looking at reinstating them.
So what is it? So transit visa is what? If you land in this country and you have to...
You still need to have a visa to land in this country.
Yeah. That's right. Make it even more difficult for people to come here. All right. All right. Let's see what happens here. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. So what went on in this story?
So they got off of the plane when they weren't supposed to, right? And then... I mean, I know from being in transit, they check your ticket again as you're leaving. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they got into the airport, went up to what just looks like a fire hydrant, but obviously had inside information. You could see some of them, when they look back at the footage, talking on their phones. So they were kind of being guided through this process. And behind this fire hydrant is this tunnel system, which is all part of a fire prevention system. A police officer noticed them and followed them into this tunnel access point.
Wow.
So they managed to, start getting into this back system before they were bussed.
So it wasn't. It's not like a secret tunnel that leads somewhere. It's just basically almost like in those old houses they used to have where the servants use a certain staircase and then the people who live in the house use another staircase. It's like a back route that the staff might use.
It's like an infrastructure thing. So it houses certain pipes. Okay. And you can get through it as a human being.
And these guys tried to make a run for it by using these tunnels to have to bypass customs?
Yes, exactly. Hmm. But thank goodness this police officer found them and they've been arrested. Wow. And now it means that transit visas might be, required again.
Okay. Well, that is a story in the news. So let me tell you about it because clearly this is something people are thinking about right now. So, okay. Transit visas, something you probably haven't thought about or given a moment's notice to for the longest time. Apparently Home Affairs playing around with the idea of reinstating these. So the actual story comes to us this morning from ENCA, which they're reputable, right? We don't think they're right. There's your morning sneeze. I knew it was coming. All right. So South Africa has decided, under Aaron Motsoaledi, who's the Home Affairs Minister, who used to be the Minister of Health before Zweli Mkhize was made the Minister of Health. Remember? Because that's what happens in our cabinet. Mm. We just shuffle people around.
Yeah, you can switch from knowing everything about medicine to knowing about Home Affairs.
And basically, it all has to do with your loyalty to the ANC. But let's leave that alone for a minute. In 2015, Home Affairs stopped transit visas for people who were passing through the country. But to curb illegal activities, they've been reinstated. Transit visas are issued to foreigners who pass through South Africa en route to neighboring countries. Motsoaledi was speaking following the arrest of Bangladeshi and Pakistani nationals who attempted to enter the country illegally this week. He said, "We're going to demand transit visas. If you transit here to Eswatini, we must understand. Even if they were not caught here, they were going to continue to Eswatini. They go to Eswatini and come back through our porous borders. We have border management now," he said. "We are deciding in Home Affairs to reinstate the transit visas." I love the way that government people think that if they make a rule, everyone's going to follow them. you can't execute on this stuff. The reason we have porous borders, Aaron Motsoaledi, is because no matter how many laws you've made, people from Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Botswana, Namibia, Swaziland, Lesotho, they just walk across the border because you guys can't control the borders. So you're going to go to Parliament, you're going to make new laws, you're going to reinstate old visas, but you still can't manage the borders, right? It's like, who are you trying to kid, dummy? These people really are ridiculously stupid, these government ministers. They are among the dumbest people I have ever heard of in my life. Corona's Boring says Koos Becker is a dickhead at ENCA is as reputable as the ANC. So you're screwing up a couple of things there, Corona's Boring. First of all, Koos Becker is not in charge of ENCA. ENCA is not owned by NSPAS. NSPAS used to be Koos Becker's business. He's not involved there anymore. He retired and he still owns shares in it, But he's no longer in charge at NASPAS. And NASPAS is nothing to do with ENCA. So make sure you clean up your very messy mind this morning, please. And we don't want to have you embarrass yourself a third time today, because those two things are not related. One thing is not like the other, if you know
what I mean. Not like the other.
No, correct. Today is World Refugee Day, according to Empty Apology. Well, I suppose we're already doing our bit for World Refugee Day in South Africa, aren't we? I mean, just take a look. Yeah. Go downtown.
It counts, doesn't it?
Yeah, go downtown in Pretoria, Johannesburg, Cape Town, Durban. You will see how many people from all over the rest of the continent we have living here. And who knows, probably even some dodgy Europeans like Radovan Krejcer, who's still languishing in a South African jail at taxpayers' expense. These are also people who are refugees, effectively, because they've come here, either legally or illegally, and they've got through Aaron Motsoaledi's porous borders that he spoke about. So there we go.
Fire tunnels.
We're already doing our bit for World Refugee Day, so you don't have to do more than you're already doing. In fact, this morning you can wake up content in the knowledge that your country is doing its bit, either advertently or inadvertently, for World Refugee Day.
Yeah.
All right. So I don't know whether you've noticed, I mentioned the Bitcoin price earlier, but there are also some other things on the stock markets of the world that everybody's a little bit worried about. The U.S. stock market tanked again at the end of last week and is looking particularly bad at the moment. So I think a lot of people are just starting to get a bit concerned about how all of this is going to affect whether or not you have more or less money, at the end of the next year. By less money, we don't mean in terms of actual cash, because you might have saved money and you might think it's going to make things better. But the fact is, like, your money is just going to be worth a whole lot less because everything is dropping.
You can save as much as you like. There's inflation soaring worldwide.
Correct. And again, this is down to how badly it's been managed by people in powerful positions all over the world. Let's just look at one or two more headlines while we're doing this. Someone's suing Elon Musk for $258 billion. it's one of the investors in Dogecoin. Remember that? That was a whole thing. Mm-hmm. Originally created as a joke, but whose value increased and fell as it was promoted by Elon Musk. Filed a $258 billion lawsuit Thursday against the billionaire and his companies Tesla and SpaceX. Keith Johnson. Doesn't that just sound like the name? It's almost like a name that was made up. Here's Keith Johnson, right? It's like the everyman.
Not his real name.
Keith Johnson says he lost money after investing in Dogecoin, described himself as an American citizen who was defrauded by what he called a Dogecoin crypto pyramid scheme. He's asking for his motion filed in a New York court to be classified as a class action suit on behalf of those who have suffered losses by investing in Dogecoin since 2019. What makes you think, because it's certainly my thinking on this, what makes you think that if it was possible to sue someone for losing money on an investment, especially a very speculative investment like Dogecoin, people would be doing it every day, right? And there's no such thing as insider trading here, because there can't be insider trading when it comes to crypto. Not in the way that you could insider trade on stocks, for example. It's all speculation. You can't sue Elon Musk. You can't sue anyone for losing money in Bitcoin or in Dogecoin or in Ethereum. Right? It's ridiculous. If you could do this, people would be suing all the time. Right, Leanne?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of crazy. Mfundo says that one poor spaza shop that is not opening in some township in South Africa due to the arrest of those guys at OR Tambo. That's true. That's probably what's happened.
Yeah, where there was a gap in the market for a cellular repair shop.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, if we're going to be stereotypical, goodness me.
That's exactly where by the way, Pumi was saying on the show on Thursday last week, the week before last, because this last Thursday was obviously a holiday. She went and had her whole phone fixed. It fell into a cooler box with water in it. And she took it to this dude at the Oriental Plaza. He fixed it for her in no time. So you know what? Even the illegal immigrants who've been arrested, you could need them at one time, and you're going to wish they were there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there have been so many times where I've popped into this one shop where it is that stereotypical shop.
Yes.
And the guys will fix something on my phone or one of my devices for free. They'll just kind of flip a switch or put a stick in something and it works. And I'm one of those people who was taught, you know, if you've got this brand of car, you take it to the that dealership and you don't get it serviced by the dodgy shop down the road. And I was always taught to do that. And with my computer, I've always been like, go to the iStore. And then recently I saw a video, there was a hidden camera issue going on where they sent in a phone or something. They jigged the phone where it just needed, you know, one kind of change. If you opened it up, it needed one little, I don't know, electronics, but something was not stuck where it needed to be stuck.
All right.
And they took it to the iStore and they were going to charge them. They said, you know, you need a new phone. This is not fixable.
Oh, wow.
And then they took it to the, it's not iFix or uFix or it's WeFix.
Okay.
They took it to a WeFix store in whichever country it was. And the guy literally did it for free and reconnected what needed to be done. So it's made me rethink, you know, now I do go to those stores. I'm not scared of sticking to doing the right thing.
And also, you know, we've lost so much respect for experts during the last 2 years because experts have let us down horribly that now you're prepared to take your chance with someone else and you want a second opinion on things, medical, technological, and every other kind. So I think we must look at all of that. That's really interesting. Also, these guys probably know quite a lot about what they're doing because they're doing it every single day on 100 different phones. So maybe they're actually better at it than the people who specialize in just one particular thing. I think it's worth considering these people. All right. So apparently, this is quite a scary story talking about the economy. Revlon, which is a well-known makeup brand, has been around for, I would like to say 100 years, but it's probably about 60, 70 years. So Revlon have filed for bankruptcy. And we were just saying the other day that if you get into women's makeup, you would be doing incredibly well because there's just a couple of hundred billion, in fact, probably dollar business going on there where you're selling women makeup and you're selling them, you know, lipstick and eyeliner and blush and eyeshadow and foundation and God knows what else. And you're making an absolute killing. I mean, some of the richest people in the world are selling women's beauty products. So how come Revlon, how come Revlon has seen its ass?
Well, apparently, and it's difficult for me to believe, but especially, you know, my business is social media for brands.
Sure.
And a lot of the time makeup brands. And we know how big that is on social media. We know about makeup influencers. They were, you know, pretty much the first people to start these tutorials, these online tutorials, and were the ones to grow or amass huge followings right from the beginning. And they're still doing it. It's still that successful.
Sure.
But apparently Revlon kind of missed the boat when it came to these things. You know, as an influencer, you get given these products for free and then you test them out and you do your thing. And they kind of said, no, we're not really into it. We're not just, you know, we're just going to look past that. And because of that, their rivals like L'Oreal and Estee Lauder, and even these upstart makeup and, you know, personal care brands have totally overtaken them. And they've been consistent in using video bloggers and Instagram personalities. Revlon kind of missed the boat with that. And it's come back to bite them, which shows you, as a brand, how important social media is. Even though there was a study released recently which said that only 10% of a brand's sales are due to social media. But it's about
perception, getting
the awareness out there. You know, influencer means influencer for a reason. People trust them and they're going to go out and buy the stuff.
I'm looking at the Revlon share price. It was at $454 just before 2000. Okay. So just before the year 2000, it was at $454 a share. By 2004, it had dropped to $21.79. By now, it's at $3.73. It's gone down the toilet. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Mm. Even though their revenue is good and their net income over the last year has been okay, they just have not been able to realize the kind of earnings that they promised they would. Also, this is where you've got to be realistic, is that companies, they have an outlook. They have a kind of a projection of where they're going. You know, you hear about this in EBITDA, the price earnings ratio, and how you value a company. And a lot of this stuff is just pulled straight out of the air. Straight out of the air. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're making it up. Zuzile says, Revlon, Jenny Button, Stutterfords. Shoo. It really scares us as small entrepreneurs. But Kazalunga, you know what? You have a better chance as a small business because you can manage things. Like, the bigger these businesses get, the harder it gets to actually manage them. You got so many
and
people
how,
involved.
The bigger it is, the bigger a tiny mistake can be.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you miss out on one influencer as a small business, it's not going to kill you. You can always, you know, fix it. But this tiny mistake ended up being huge. I mean, you think about it. So it's actually 90 years old, this company.
Sure.
Wow. They started selling nail polishes during the Great Depression. and then they later added coordinated lipsticks in those days where your lips had to match your nails.
Yeah.
By 1955, the brand was international. And then there was an acrimonious takeover in 1985 by a holding company. But to think that how much they've been through, and to think that social media took them down. So the biggest problem that they had were their debts, which they were unable to pay their creditors. So they, in April, listed their assets at $2.3 billion and their debts as $3.7 billion.
Jeez.
So therein the problem lies.
Unreal.
So, I mean, for something that came about by... through the Great Depression to be taken down by influencers or non-influencers is quite a thing.
Yeah, that's quite scary. I can't believe it. Like, Revlon is something that everybody's had on their lips, pardon the pun, for years. Yeah. I mean, like, Revlon is a name that's just, you didn't think would ever go away. It's like, you know, Kodak in cameras used to be a thing, and Nokia in cell phones, and look at what's happened. I'll tell you what, this is an exciting time to be alive. There is no doubt that the things that we used to believe in, the things that we thought would last forever, are starting to run out of life cycle. And it's an exciting thing to see. It's not great. It's not a winner for everybody. But it's definitely a time for you with new ideas, with exciting kind of foresight and a little bit of risky behavior and some lucky bets. You could make a ton of money these days. Tracy says, with Revlon, they never evolved. They still used ingredients that aren't sustainably sourced, etc. They are one of the main culprits when it comes to testing in animals, too. So I think that probably turned on them as well. Hmm. They also bought over Elizabeth Arden a few years ago and pretty much caused their downfall, too. So I think that it sounds to me like Revlon's management were just really bad. They didn't know what they were doing. Very, very bad management.
Evolution is the entirety of the problem there, whether it's your ingredients or how you market your products. And the older a company is, the more they're likely to say, no, we've always done this and it's always worked, so we're not changing.
They get calcified.
And they're scared of changing.
They get stuck in their ways. And that's true for it's true for relationships. It's true for business. It's true for friendships. You know, eventually you have to evolve. And this is hugely important. Change is inevitable. Nothing lasts forever.
That's it.
Yeah, I love it.
And, you know, you think something, certainly 10 years ago, you'd think it might be cheapening your brand to put it in the hands of Jeffree Star or something like that. And that's why there was a lot of resistance. But you have to have the foresight.
Yeah, that's absolutely
so easy to miss.
That is so right. Okay, and moving from that point to something of the psychological dimension, because that's what we do on a Monday morning. We talk about evolution. We talk about improving the ideas and changing the ideas when new information comes up. We've got Dr. Hanan Bushkin coming in a moment or two. And he is, of course, a renowned psychologist. He's the head of the Anxiety and Trauma Clinic in Johannesburg. And someone called Wounded at Work sent us an email about bullying in the workplace that she's experiencing at the moment. So I'm going to go through this quickly. We call her Wounded at Work. She says, I would like to remain anonymous, but I have a slight problem in my workplace. A certain group and type of women are hindering my development and career growth prospects within our organization. They have profiled and spread malicious rumors about my personality as being cold and ruthless to key C-suite management people. So I wonder if this is something that Dr. Hanan has dealt with before in his practice. We'll find out. Doc, it's nice to see you. How are you?
Hey guys, I'm well. How are you?
Good. Happy Monday morning. So you heard the email. Monday. So this person is having trouble. She's a woman. She's having trouble from other women in the organization. She says a certain type of woman. I don't know if that's a fair characterization from her point of view. It seems to be fair. What do we make of this? How do you stop people from being malicious and spreading ugliness about you in the workplace? And if you can't stop them, how can you deal with it yourself? How can you make yourself less susceptible to this kind of thing in the workplace? Because it can affect careers, right?
It affects careers. It affects mental health. It's workplace bullying is a very prevalent and very important and something that's quite in common. And significant because most people, significantly so, will experience some form of workplace bullying. And the victims, so to speak, are mainly women, and they're men bullying women and women, believe it or not, bullying women. And most people that bully are either on the same level or mostly are one level ahead of you or above you. So they have leverage over you. And the reason why it is so prevalent and sometimes even accepted is because unfortunately in big corporates, you get rewarded for contributing to the bottom line, and bullies are generally very strong characters. They're very robust, they seem very confident, they get the job done, and corporate in a lot of cases reward this kind of behavior towards other people as long as they get the job done. And when you think about bullying, you think about, you know, a boss screaming at an employee.
Yes.
But bullying can be very could seem much more subtle than that. It could be subtle form of harassment. Mm-hmm. It could be verbal bullying. It could be intimidation. And for those that are listening through my practice, I've summarized the four different types of bullying that I think you want to be aware of, because you want to label it for what it is. As you know, I'm a big fan of labeling things accurately, because when you label things accurately, you can deal with it.
Right.
So an analogy is, if your car is broken down and I just go, well, my car is broken down, that doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. But the moment I go, well, the front right tire is flat, now I can start dealing with it because I've labeled it specifically and accurately.
Right.
So in the workplace, you've got to label things accurately and specifically so you can start dealing with it accurately and efficiently. So the first type of bullying is the other type of bullying. This is like the aggressive. You see it a mile away, the people that scream and shout and belittle people. And they don't care who is in front of them, who is watching, and who's being affected. So we call this type the aggressive type of bullying.
Right.
The second type of bullying is the back-ended critic, the one that's always taking a jab, but it seems like a compliment, but it's a jab. And it seems like they're trying to help you through your career and trying to develop you, but all they're doing is they bring you down. That's what we call the back-end critic. The third type of bullying is somebody that manipulates by withholding resources. So you want to improve on your career, you want to advance in your career, but you have somebody that has the leverage and power over resources, and they just are not giving you the tools to succeed. And they're not doing it for any other reason because they do not want you to succeed. Now, by the way, just in line with that, a lot of bullying occurs not with higher management attacking lower management. It's actually somebody that's just one level above you because they are threatened by your success. They don't want to go for the lowest ranking employee because they're not threatened by that. Mm. They're threatened by somebody that might take their position away from them. So withholding of resources is a great way to slow your progress down or your process down and your self-development in your work, and therefore not be a threat to the bullying. And the fourth type of bullying, I call these people the jester. These are the two-faced individuals, the ones that seem that they want to help you, but behind the scene, they start meddling. They start murking your name. They start murking your reputation. They start dirtying and throwing some accusations around. But to your face, they are your so-called best friend, the two-faced jester.
Right.
And all those types of bullying happens. Most people experience it throughout their career. Now, the question is, what do you do once you're aware of it, once you've labeled it? And it's okay to say, I am being bullied. That's okay. It's okay. You name it. Name it. And I'm being bullied by a particular person in a particular way. Well, I've written down 7 things that I want you to take into account if that does happen to you. So the first thing is, this is quite important. You want to speak up early. You want to speak up early, because the moment you set the tone and you set the precedence to a bully that they can, then they will. So you want to speak up as soon as you label the front right tire being flat. Deal with it immediately. Don't wait. Don't keep on driving, so to speak. Don't keep on and pretending that it's going to go away by itself, because usually it doesn't. It gets progressively worse. And when you do speak up, then you are the bad person that, well, what's your problem kind of thing. So speak up early. The moment you pick it up, you speak up. Now, by the way, it doesn't mean that when you do speak up early that you have to create a whole circus around it. You can have an amicable, honest, transparent conversation with the person and ask them, well, what is the issue? What is the problem? Do they feel that you can do things better? How do you renegotiate the rules of the game and the communication? So, but you got to speak up early. The second thing that I always recommend is you document the communication. Document it. So if this had to go legal or you had to go to HR, you have all the proof on your side, whether it's email communication, WhatsApp communications, perhaps in minutes of meetings, perhaps somebody was around you when you did have the conversation. You can document what they have seen and have them as collateral to be able to confront that should this go maybe a bit further down the legal route. Number three, self-care outside of work. Look after yourself. And I know this sounds very airy-fairy and doesn't seem like anything to do with the bullying, but the truth is you do need to preserve and conserve your coins to be able to deal with the bullying.
Right.
So make sure that you do look after yourself outside of work, whether it's good, healthy relationships, diet, exercise, sleep, a sense of purpose outside of work, hobbies, make sure that you have the energy.
In other words, don't eat, sleep, breathe your job, because it might be sapping your strength, not making you better.
Exactly right. That's exactly to the point.
So I know you've got more of these points, but there is this niggling irritation in the back of my mind about people who claim that they're being bullied when they're really not. They're just shit at their jobs. How do you know that's not you? Because you might actually be, constructively getting yourself into these situations without even realizing it.
Right. So one of the points that apart from speaking up early is that you need to communicate, whether it's you communicate to the person that you feel is bullying you, or you need to communicate directly to HR with the intention of communicating the rules of the game. So if I feel that I'm being bullied, and perhaps to your point, Gareth, if I feel that I'm being bullied, but I'm actually not doing my job accurately, and I do speak up and I turn to the person that's so-called bullying me and I go, this is what I feel. And the person comes back and goes, well, these are the rules of the game, and this is what I expect from you. These are your KPIs, and this is the roadmap to your success, and this is why you're not achieving it. Then through that communication, I'll be able to ascertain whether I'm gaslighting myself, because that's possible, or I'm being gaslighted by the bully. But healthy communication through the rule set is very, very important.
All right. So back to your things that you can do.
So
I interrupted you halfway through the list.
No, great. So you speak up early, you document the information, you self-care. Number four, you do your research. Make sure you know what the policies are that have been put together by your corporate that counteract or deal with these kind of situations. So know your policy. Talk to the person. So it's okay to communicate and actually say, hey, listen, this is what I feel. This is what's going on. But remember, document all the information.
Right.
Talk to the person. Speak up. Say, this is what I feel. This is what's been going on. Or is there an issue? Is there a problem? Can I do things better? Can you do things better? Can we have an open communication around this thing that's going on between us? Can we renegotiate the rules of the game? Second last thing, HR. If you need to escalate to HR, that's completely appropriate. Again, we're not creating a big circus. We're just having a conversation. And I need to go back to point one. You do it early so it doesn't turn to into a big circus. Because the moment you turn to somebody or you turn to HR and say, listen, I've been bullied for the last 3 years, now it's a big deal. Now it's a big deal versus, hey, this is what happened last week. I want to address it early. It happened with this person. What are the policies? What are the procedures? What can I do? What can you do to ensure that this doesn't happen again or to correct whatever's been going on? And the last thing that I want to mention, which I have seen in my practice, which is not a bad idea, should all of this fail, is look for an alternative job. There's nothing wrong with building up your CV and building up your confidence through having alternatives. The moment you don't have any alternative and this is the only thing that is going for you and the only option that you have, you might be desperate. And therefore, when you're desperate, you might accept things that normally you would never accept. You know, so I give the analogy of when you're desperate, you accept things that you wouldn't. Imagine you have not eaten for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And I present to you the one food that now you look at and you go, I would never eat this. Well, I'm telling you, if you're desperate in 3 weeks' time, you would eat anything. Anything that I put in front of you, you would eat because you're desperate. And that happens in relationships too, by the way. When I'm desperate, I would accept anything that is put in front of me because I'm desperate. And when it comes to a job, it's not dissimilar. If I'm desperate, I will accept substandard behavior. So therefore, having alternatives and judging your worth based on the alternative is a good option.
I call that the law of 2 feet, and I've always applied it to myself. If I'm really unhappy somewhere, then I've got to get up on my own 2 feet and walk out of the door. And there's no one who can be more empowered than the person who decides they're going to do that. Even in a market where maybe you think, oh well, I don't know if I'm going to get another job, et cetera, et cetera. You got to put those things aside. If you value yourself more than being abused, you'll do that. And it's a tough thing for some people to do, but you've got to think about that as the logical outcome if you're going to say no more, right? Doc, this is important, and
yes,
I don't want us to breeze past this. You mentioned HR. HR departments are inevitably run by women. I don't think there's a single HR department in South Africa that isn't run by women. Why is that? And in this particular complaint that we had, they were talking about women bullying women. Why is that a thing? Let's not breeze past it. If it was men, we'd be talking about toxic masculinity. We'd be talking about all of that shit. And we've just had Father's Day. God knows there isn't stuff to unpack there. What's this? I mean, we're not going to ignore this and pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah. So we know from research that women are better are more equipped and gravitate more towards dealing with people, and men are generally more gravitated to deal with things. Mm-hmm. So generally women would fill up these roles a lot quicker, and there would be a better fit to dealing with people in HR, and hence these departments are filled with women. But the reason why, you must understand, the way you move up the social or the career hierarchy is not through being soft, it's through being tough and through fending off threats and through being maybe manipulative. And I don't mean manipulative even in a negative sense, but right. through playing the game quite shrewdly and quite well. And the women that get to the top, just like the men do, they play the game shrewdly and they play the game intelligently and they play by specific rules that are very smart. So the women that get there, they don't want to relinquish their position either. They got there through sweat, blood, and tears. Nobody's given, or very few, you know, we think that people are given their position just because they look pretty. Mm-hmm. But people work hard for their position, especially in corporates where you have to fight and fend off Absolutely. Some threats. So many of these so-called, these people that are getting bullied, they're getting bullied by men and women. But the reason why these women bully them is because these are very powerful women that would not give up their position for nothing. They want to fight it off. And the moment they see a threat by another woman, they're not just going to be taking it lying down. They will naturally fight it off quite viciously.
Absolutely. All right. I think that's a valuable point to throw in there. Just because we, you know, it was brought up specially in the email, so I didn't want to just pretend it wasn't part of the discussion. All right, Doc, there's so much more to unpack. I hope you had a happy Father's Day. Did your kids make a little fuss of you?
Thank you. No, it was very, very cute and very special. I felt needed, wanted, acknowledged. It was magnificent.
All right. We've got to talk about Father's Day, and we've got to talk about the role of fathers. And it's something that I think in South Africa is a massive.
Definitely.
It's a big, big event. It's a big story, even if people don't always feel comfortable talking about it. So we've got to discuss that at some point. Just pencil that in one of our sessions to talk about fathers and male
Absolutely.
Role models. Big thing in South Africa. All right. Dr. Hanan Bushkin, very nice to see you. Thank you very much.
Nice to see you guys.
Good to have you on the show this morning. It is Monday morning with Dr. Hanan, but it's also Monday morning with Collectomania, and that's coming up next. Stick around for that and a whole lot more. Leanne Moll and I are here to look after you between now and 8 o'clock. Don't you go anywhere. We want to hear from you too in the comments. So drop us a comment on either the YouTubes, or you can send us an email, contact@cliffcentral.com. We want to know what's on your mind.
CliffCentral.com